Good morning. Welcome to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike.
Yeah,
it's been a little techie issue this morning.
Happy Thursday, Mike.
Let's just move on.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, some openers today. I think there was some new documentation that just recently landed on the Microsoft website. Tommy, you want to tee us in on what you found?
Oh, yeah. So this is going to be my Friday reading. I haven't had a chance to go through all of it. But again, Melissa Coates, I want to get all the names of the people who contributed this. Melissa Coates.
Can't hear you if you're looking at the other screen.
Melissa Coates, Pete Myers, Matthew Roach, Alex Powers, and Chris Webb.
There we go.
All put together an amazing additional contribution towards the adoption roadmap, and it's called Implementation Planning. So this is something that you should read soon because you'll probably be hearing about it on the podcast.
Very true.
It's just part of that adoption. And again, it's more of that blueprint of how do you actually implement it, not what goes into it. So I'm excited to read that. I think it just got launched Tuesday.
2/15 is when it was. The date, the published date is 2/15. And they've got a nice big old video at the beginning there with Matthew just kind of doing some more introduction stuff. It's, again, all the content that has come from this team has been top notch. It's been spot on. It's really good. Solid things to think about, mull over as you do your Power BI implementations as well. So I'll throw that link in the chat window.
It's exciting that they're continually iterating on that type of material, right? To try to...
Well, you know why?
Not try, but take the learnings from all the big implementations that they're doing and sharing.
Totally.
That. And love the fact that it's the same core group of people, and it's meant to replace some of the stuff that was already out there. So I'm definitely looking forward to digging into it.
You know, the reason why this is so popular is because it's landed on the podcast. It's gotten so many hits and views from the podcast.
Where are all these views coming from? YouTube?
Wow! Look at the analytics on this page. Everything's coming from. You know,
why are all
Power BI Tips podcast?
Mike rolls into the documentation looking for his own quotes.
I'm looking for the word game.
Gonna work like
searching
that,
for game changer here. Like, searching for the words.
I think it's the reverse, where like in quotes, Matthew Roach is saying.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The pyramid thing. Where's the pyramid thing?
They are our favorite people, and we'll definitely do a series around it. So I'm excited to jump into that. Well, and the other part too is, like, you can talk center of excellence, but how do you actually implement a center of excellence effectively?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to create a Confluence page or a SharePoint site called BI Center of Excellence.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you've done it.
Yeah, what does that really mean? And they're doing things here like breaking it down by different teams. You know, personal team, BI team.
Right.
You know, departmental BI. Enterprise BI. So I think there are different flavors of this, and we talk a lot about like how much of your data is governed. And I think it's important to note here, it's a lot about your process. What kind of process does your company adhere to or build, right? Every company might have a slightly different plan to do that, but you have these governed data sources and you have ungoverned data sources. Well, so great, not a big deal. How do you plan on getting from those ungoverned sources into a governed area? So I hope it addresses some of those questions as well. That'll be very interesting to see how that pans out. Anyways.
It will indeed.
Let's talk about the topic for episode 84.
Yes. What are we talking about?
Today's our conversation around those, what does ownership mean? And this could be taken maybe a couple different ways. You know, what are areas of ownership in Power BI? Are we talking reports, service, governance pieces? What does that look like? And how would you define it? And then maybe what are some things that you do to help you manage the ownership of certain things? So this is going to be an interesting conversation. I was just explaining this to some people the other day, talking to some people at Microsoft. I'm like, we're the middlemen. We're the guys that sit in the middle between like the data that's being generated and the report that's being created. So sometimes we have the ability to control things. Sometimes we don't. And so how do you identify owners or stewards of different data elements, and how does that work?
And I'm going to be okay today, depending on where we go, that if we do break this into a multiple part series, because I could absolutely see that with people, with process, with the data, like with reports compared to a business terminology. So we'll see where it goes. But this is a very broad topic that I think is, it's in need to of a conversation. you don't really hear about where does ownership lie or how do you do that from a universal standpoint. I think every organization may have an idea of that. I think that's lacking a lot of things that I see. So we'll see where it goes today in terms of how broad we get or how specific we get. But that's where I'm excited to kind of talk about these different areas. And I think we're going to focus today on some of the problem areas.
I like it. Seth, what do you think? What are your thoughts on ownership? What would your definition be around, you know, when we say ownership of Power BI assets or elements? What does your world of definition seem like?
Emotional damage.
Oh. I love that guy. Who's the gentleman who does that on TikTok or YouTube?
On memes all over the place, or parts of little TikToks.
Yes. I do the YouTube shorts, and they're everywhere.
So care to break that down in context of data ownership or
yes.
ownership?
I think this is going to be interesting and could potentially branch into other conversations. But for me, it's hard to separate the components because they're all tied together in what I would define as ownership. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of people. It's a little bit of process. It's a little bit of terminology and how an organization works. And I think it is a topic that also is addressed, you know, in a previous episode where we were talking about Matthew Roach and like the chasm between different groups, right? How do you bridge the gap of either ownership of like passing a part of a project over to another group, or mm-hmm. that could be within the team too as well, right? So it's like there's some sort of you're not doing everything. And we're talking about ownership because you're expecting to hand off and some other person or group to complete mm-hmm. the project that we're working on.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, in simplistic terms, ownership is like doing the thing and completing it.
Same.
I don't know which one you want to talk about.
Well, in the context of Power BI, I mean, I think there's a couple things going on here, right? I mean, if I think about where I look at different teams, so I work with a number of teams. Some teams are smaller. They have one person who kind of runs all the show, right? They build the data model, they build the reports, and then they publish them, right? So the ownership of everything kind of lies under one person. I think that is a bit easier to manage because one person has kind of ultimate control around what decisions you make, what are the names of the workspaces, how do we deploy things? Like, there's not a lot of variance there. On the flip side, as teams grow in size and you start looking, and we've talked about this before in the podcast, talking about different roles and how they shake out, right? There's potentially someone who's doing more of the data engineering. We might have people that are just doing work on the data models. We have enough models that it requires someone to just model information. And then we have potentially a larger team of people consuming those reports in building thin reports on top of those models. So if you start stretching out the team now, I think the process and who owns what pieces of that process can start slightly changing. We now need to have documented, like, how do we deploy the reports? What are you allowed to connect to? How do you share it? What is the proper sharing mechanism that we're going to use? So I think, I mean, that's where I think I go when I think about ownership.
So, yeah, I'm go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, let's back it out into those specifically and talk about them, right? Like,
yeah.
So this is a huge topic for me, right? And if I'm talking about a person, what do we mean by ownership? Ultimately, what we're asking for is an individual to be accurate with their estimates mm-hmm. and deliver on time. Right. You are guaranteeing, or you're putting your stamp of approval on completing something for someone or for, you know, an area of the business. And whether that's because it's a saleable item or because somebody's going to rely on the work that you're doing or needs the insights that you're providing. Like, I think ownership in quotes means people want you to take responsibility mm-hmm. for the work that you're telling others that you're going to do and that you execute on it.
So Mike, it sounds to me that you're taking this approach, ownership, specifically tied to the Power BI space, like the author, the designer, the developer. And Seth, you sound a little more broad where it's like kind of like the business too, where who owns the sales region? Who owns the categories for products?
Yes and no.
No.
kind maybe. Of. I mean, that's the end consumer, okay. Right? But yeah. It doesn't matter if the designer is supposed to put together the UX elements that the Power BI report author needs to implement in his model, right? Like there's an end goal, and the goal could be we need to build this report and it's got to be done in 2 weeks.
Right. Okay.
The UI UX person, like how that breaks out, everybody's estimating how long their work is going to take. And there's one or multiple handoffs that have to happen. There's going to be an overall owner of the report, like someone who's validating that all of these team members built the same thing, but there's responsibilities that each one of them have, right? UI UX, like whoever does the initial conversation hands that information off to UI UX. That person is going to build the components for Power BI report. You have a modeler. All these things have to merge together into a final product, mm-hmm. right? Which is a report that somebody reviews and approves and goes on. Ironically enough, in the microcosm of this Power BI report, do that with any project. We're talking about the same thing, right? It just, as you scale into not just talking about a singular task within a report, that's where the chasm gets bigger, I think. And as you work between teams, it gets more difficult. And we can talk about like, what are those challenges that, you know, we have to try to overcome within this high level realm of ownership.
Right.
So Tommy, I think you're doing a good job of kind of picking the two areas up here. And I'd like to rephrase, I think, how you characterized us. Because I think Seth and I are talking about ownership things, but in a slightly different way, right? Mm-hmm. Seth's talking more about delivering something with owning the process and owning the steps it takes you to get your part of that process complete, right? Whatever that may be. I was referring more about like who is actually owning, you know, after the process maybe has been built or, you know, when something goes wrong, what is it, you know, what parts of Power BI are owned by various people? Like who is owning who's the admin of the workspace, right? That you're owning that workspace and figuring out how you let people in or out, right?
Yeah.
Are you managing ownership of the workspace by using Active Directory groups? You know, how are you getting people in and out of that, right? Who's owning that process? And so I think maybe some of what I'm talking about or speaking to is around, I would say from my world, it's two parts, right? There's ownership of data elements. And so I've likened this analogy a couple times here. Like I'm the middleman, right? I don't necessarily control the data that's coming to me as I build these data models, but I can clean it. I can have business rules around cleaning that data. So I think ownership, and again, for me, I'm really big on data quality, you know, being able to identify what's there. And we've said it in previous podcasts, if you don't measure it, there's no way to track it. There's no way to figure out if you're good or bad in any direction there for data quality. So I think one of the things that I'm kind of hep on in this ownership piece is who owns the data quality? Who owns column by column? Where does this data come from? And if it's right or not, and do I have a process in place where I can kick back to the owners, the stewards of that data, and say, hey, we found these weird values coming in your column. They're blank. They're missing. They're not in parameters based on what we said. Can you go fix it? Because what I find happens a lot is we get the data, we do some engineering to it, we put it into a report, and someone's like, well, that's not right. Well, okay, then we go back and look at the measures and the DAX and say, okay, was that broken? No. Okay, let's go back and look at, oh, look, it's actually a problem in the data. And so now what I do is I spend time re-engineering part of the pipeline to fix the bad data as opposed to going back and upstream and saying, here, data steward, you own this, fix it.
So you said something that struck a nerve. You said like, obviously, like, you know, you go back to the ownership, but you look at the, like something's wrong. Well, the problem is if there is no ownership or you have a culture of ownership around the terminology, who's inputting what
terminology too. Yeah.
We own all of it, whether we know it or not. So good example is,
I don't agree with that.
Continue because I'm going to disagree.
Keep going.
No, that's great. I'm not saying that we by default own it, but everyone perceives that we own it. My explanation. If there's no one who owns what account, like an account's country is, right? Like it should be in the United States, but it's left blank. What happens in a report is you have sales and it's blank. And they're like, hey, why is sales year to date the number one blank? that's on you. Usually that's on the report author, because there's no ownership of who's supposed to input that. Then you look at this like a dummy and look like, I don't know why that row is blank in that, in the bar chart.
Yep.
I have no idea, because you just, you're doing a relationship on accounts and you're doing a relationship on sales.
Yep.
Should show all the countries, right? Theoretically. But if there's no ownership of that process of who's inputting that data, or, hey, that member's wrong, it shouldn't be this member, it shouldn't be that join date, etc. If there's no process or responsibility, and that's the word I really like, is ownership's really responsibility. You're responsible for the quality of your data. You should know your regions. You should know your products in the hierarchy of that. Bikes should not be in the motorcycle category. But if there's no responsibility there, there's no ownership, people are just randomly putting things in.
But that's a process related thing. I understand there's ownership, people. But that's a process related piece of this that says, right. Okay, we have a process to identify improperly defined data. Yeah. We have a process by which we can go back to that team. And I've said this before in my consulting engagements, it's impossible to have 100% clean data. It's impossible. Sure. You can work really hard at it and you can get it really, really close. But now you're talking like financial systems, which have incredible tests and rigors around making sure that those numbers are right, because you can't log into your bank account and be like, oh, whoops, we forgot to track the last 10 transactions. You just can't have it. So that though is a lot more expensive. And so I think this is where I see, like, if it's like an asymptotic curve kind of thing, right? The closer you get to 100% data quality, the more the expense is going to increase and increase. I don't know if you ever get there. There's always going to be something you're trying to clean, fix, or update.
Well, try answering to the stakeholder, like, why is that blank? Well, there was no information there. They're just going to stare. They're not going to go, oh, I need to go back to CRM, or I need to talk to my BDM. They're going to go, that doesn't sound right. The report's wrong.
Can you fix it? And then it becomes our, so
it's our responsibility. It's our responsibility. Therefore, we have the ownership. Not that we.
No. Yeah. But that, so to me, that's a breakdown of like clearly defining the lines, right?
Correct.
Reporting shows the reality of your data.
Your
right?
data.
What mm-hmm. we can do is we can bucket that data. We can filter certain things out. We can clean the data that exists. Like, that's a data culture thing. Like, your organization needs to know that if there is missing data, you don't fabricate data. Like, we don't make stuff up that doesn't exist. If mm-hmm. it's not there, that's a source system problem that someone else needs to go resolve, or you're saying you don't want to see anything that doesn't have that data, and I will happily filter it out and take the $1 million of sales that go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Until it's properly input into the systems. Like, that's a handoff piece in the that's not your responsibility direction.
Well, and I think it also makes it convoluted a bit more when you start talking about what leadership level can you engage to? And this is why I think, you know, when you see Power BI deploying, right, an executive level sponsor of these things is very important, because you're going to have these kind of conflicts. You're going to have people that say, hey, this data is wrong. You're going to go let people know, hey, we found these kind of mistakes. Okay, thank you. And then it's not high enough on their priority list to go spend the hour of time to go in and fix it. And they're just like, well, you can just fix it in post, you know, fix it after the episode aired and you're on the wrong episode, you know, fix it after the fact,
something like that.
Yeah. So you go back, you do 85 and then go back and do 84.
Exactly. Like right.
Twist and
we're
bend
closer
time,
to 100, which is great. So,
you know what? So we can get to 100 much faster if we skip every other episode.
Yeah. I have a question, Mike. We were talking about ownership in the context of individual owners within a report.
Agreed.
And then I thought you were going to take this in a different direction, but I don't know if you did. Because you said you were reading this as the report owner, an admin, AD groups, like data management, data quality, like what groups within an organization own certain aspects of the overall solution.
Yep.
Is that different?
I mean, I don't think...
Or is it really the same? It's the same topic.
I think it's the same topic. I think it's just data managed differently, right? I mean, that's the data that Power BI uses to generate reports and display reports. But when I think of ownership, the two things that bubble to my mind are ownership of the data and then ownership of the reports and how the reports are built and kind of executed.
Okay. And Tommy, you're shaking your head. Oh, sorry. I cut you off.
Go ahead.
I was going to say same corporation, different department.
I agree.
Yep. Yeah. Could be. right? This is this has been the fight we've had between IT and business a lot of the time, right? You know, not my job. I made you the table. Here you go. Business, do what you want with it.
Right.
Okay. So I guess my question here is, when I talk about ownership, it has to be around certain processes. And whether it's one of the 15 different acronym things of RACI, right? Mm-hmm. A RACI matrix, where you're responsible, accountable, consulted, informed, whatever the case may be, right? Versus, which is kind of like high level, right? I have a process that handles a breakdown. We have a report in the wild that people can't see. What team is responsible for making sure that that report is shared? We have a breakdown in the Power BI service and somebody can't use a gateway. Is that the IT team? Mm-hmm. Is that the admin? Like, it goes somewhere.
Yep.
Like, you should have these processes in place in your organization so that people know who to go to, i.e. the owner, so that the owner can resolve the issue. In the same way, it's a slightly different process when we're building the thing, and that's typically the SDLC, right? Mm-hmm. The process by which you build something. Who plans it? Who defines it? Who designs it? Who builds it? Who tests it? Who's deploying it? Who's doing final verification that what you built and deployed is the right thing, and the end consumer, like, it, you know, has what they need. All those pieces, whether it's RACI, TACI, whatever, like, however you want to delineate it, like, I think many organizations don't have these pieces in place, which is why ownership as a overall, like, quote unquote, problem exists in high level form, because people aren't, like, instantly going to the same process. Mm-hmm. And the larger the organization, I've seen that there are larger and larger challenges if you don't have a static place, right? The process. Everybody knows where do I go, right? Or how does this thing get built? Where are we in the project? Can you tell me, like, how much more time it's going to take, right? People start then talking about who owns this? Who owns this? Because it's about execution, right?
It's true.
So I think the first main component of ownership is defining a process, and then for the individuals that are responsible within that process, are you tying performance metrics or incentives or something around the fact that their name is on that thing and they're committing to you in the business that they're going to deliver and execute?
I think you just solved my problem, actually, because I think the largest problem with ownership is getting people to actually do it. Like, hey, you're responsible for your accounts and the quality of those accounts. But and someone's going to go, I don't have time for it.
This is exactly right.
Right.
I mean, all this hinges on someone needs to be able to own. And this is where I say, this is why I was talking about data quality earlier. Data quality, I think, is not the easiest thing to measure, but you can measure it. You can, figure out what a quality score would look like, right? If your data for your area and things that you were identifying that comes from your team or your database or whatever that comes from, if the quality of that data doesn't meet these criterias, and if your quality is below 80%, you need to spend time to go fix it. And that can be tied to what Seth was talking about, is expectations from the business to the different team members around, hey, your expectation is you're going to provide these data sources and the data quality will be a measurable 95% quality all the time. If it dips below that, you'll work hard to rectify and clean it. And that's something you could, that would be a great item to put inside a Power BI goals, right? Here's my data quality number. Here's a report that we have around data quality. We measure this.
Yeah.
We figure out if it's within our tolerances or not. Here's a number every day. This report runs, refreshes itself. Boom. We now have a data quality score. That data quality score can go on to goals. That goals could be tied to certain individuals. You know, what's your lead time to turn around a report? You know, make your estimate, put down an estimate. It's going to take you 3 days. Track that. You know, did it take you 3 days or less? Did you meet your goal? That's another thing, another data point you can track.
Are we improving our quality over time?
this is why you do a retro, right? Yeah, like
right. Exactly.
after you do a report.
Yes.
Like, are you working with the team or yourself? Did you do things in a performant way? Could you have built a template and next time save 2 hours, right? Like, mm-hmm. Are you reviewing how you did your work so you can become better? And realistically, like, that's what these larger, more formal processes with teams start doing, right? Is you know nothing's going to be perfect ever. Let's identify in this, you know, work stream, what are the things that went well? What are the things that didn't go well? And bring those to the forefront for myself or for a team so that the next time you iterate or the next time you build something, you start shedding a lot of the virtuous waste or like the things that you are consistently cause problems for you when you're doing something.
For those listening, I think this last 10 minutes would single-handedly alleviate that stress of the BI pro and the report author being perceived as responsible for ownership of all the data where there are blanks. But you have to be able to set this up in a company where you're responsible for accounts, you're responsible for products, for your particular products. We have a data quality score around that, so you can always check that. Because then people know where to go. Again, without that identifiable ownership, it's always going to point to the report. Like, well, the report must be wrong. Because people think if it's in the report, I'm assuming everything else is right. But what you, Mike, and Seth just said would alleviate that almost significantly, almost completely, because you have that in place. Now, that being said, you got to get that in place. You got to get buy-in.
Yeah. Right.
And this goes back to the stakeholders. And then you have to define quality. Is it just blanks? Is it defined?
Yes.
This is a lot of work, too, to set something like this up.
Yes and no, to maybe some degree. I mean, I think there are some tools out there that can give you some shortcuts to some of this answer. I know Gil Revive from DataChant had done a historical review of data quality pieces. He had made like a simple Power BI report that was going to data flows. And then in the data flows, he was able to monitor quality of things over time. But again, I don't think you put data quality metrics or data quality requirements around every piece of data you have in your entire organization. No, I think it really
significant portions.
I agree. I think there's, again, I think this is also why it's important to prioritize what of your data sets you have are going to fit that, we'll call it the certified space. Mm-hmm. That the area where we would say this is something that's important enough that we need to know that it's accurate. We're going to apply an SLA around it. We're going to have data quality metrics, right? There's certain data sets in your organization that are that important. That those are the ones that I think you put some more of these controls around and build more process around. Well, how do we correct the data if it's wrong? How do we, you know, build reports onto this and verify that they're true based on what the data is saying? It's not the reports aren't doing something weird with DAX or it's missing information.
And I think if I recall a lot of like the adoption roadmap or implementing and building a data culture, right? Like these are things or artifacts that you have teams that are or an individual responsible is saying like, hey, data quality is important to the organization. What are the steps and processes we need to follow to ensure we have 80%, right? Because, or what is the threshold that the business wants, right? First, as a sign-off point, how do I get my data quality up to 80%? Here are the things everything should follow to ensure that we're following our internal guidelines of 80% data quality. Here's the five steps everybody should follow. Who's the owner of all these steps? Maybe it's me, maybe it's whatever. But those reports, those, you know, at some point in time need to like fit into that five-step process to ensure data quality. And I think what's interesting to me is, like, Mike, I'm thinking of a conversation we just had last night, right?
Yep.
Where when we talk to or talk about how we engage with employees or people who don't know as much about Power BI, what do? You teach them. You bring them up to speed. You show them how this feature works. You show them how to implement it. And then you can expect that person knows exactly how to do the thing next time you ask them to.
Correct.
I cannot tell you how many parts of an organization don't have that same thing. Are you
exactly
as
right.
a person or owner
yep.
showing or telling people how a process should work, mm-hmm. or getting buy-in to ensure that you're delivering something, or yep. that the organization is working the way it should. Like, and if you can't come back to a simple diagram, where is that conversation starting? It's not. It's ending. You have these expectations. It's the difference between teaching and showing somebody what to do, right? Or showing them what the process should be doing,
mm-hmm.
and then having them disseminate or buy into that and make it part of their ownership of what they do, as opposed to just saying, well, they should just know how to do it. What result do you think is going to turn out better?
This I'm smiling because I remember there was a moment we were working together. We were working on a project and you were like, I just need this stuff done. And you looked at me, Mike, you know, make it happen. And so I took the approach and I said, okay, look, I know what we're doing here. We're building a process. And so instead of just going out and doing the thing and making, you know, whatever we were building, making the report, right? I went back and stepped back and said, okay, how do I build walls, guardrails around this process so that I can communicate to other people or the rest of the team around what this is doing? Out of this popped a piece of documentation that defined, here's some of the rules of the road around how our report should look, how it should feel, some of the interactions. Here's a template file. Here's some sample things that we're going to use. We're going to reuse this language multiple times. And when I got done with this, I remember you kind of tapping on the shoulder and be like, okay, I asked you to get this stuff done. Thank you for getting it done. I didn't understand you were going after this process-based thing. Also, that's helpful. And that became kind of like a pivotal moment, I think, for some of the stuff we were working on, where it became kind of more of a regularly maintained documentation piece that the team was using to implement that multiple times.
I like that terminology, the rules of the road.
Yeah, guardrails.
Because I think that's one of the biggest parts there too, is the restrictions, right?
Yes.
Where there is a defined way to go. Like if you had a CRM system, yeah. right? And you define ownership. Well, who owns what? What are the allowed, in a sense, allowed values? And where does it need to be inputted? Because you say, oh, I input it in our other systems. Like, no, it needs to go through this. You own the account based on these restrictions. Here's when you need to input it. If we don't know what the member is, or if we don't know if these things, you have 2 weeks to do so once they become a member. You own that. That's your account. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of goes along with any part of this. But I think too, the rules of the road would define the priorities, right? You don't need to necessarily, if you messed up I don't want to say like the state, but something very ambiguous. Okay, fine. But member type, country, state, you know, join date, those are things you must are huge priorities. And you,
correct,
as you said, you will be measured on,
correct,
kind of thing. Your yep. ability to input this, you have 2 weeks to do so as of, you know, a certain date. Here's your rules of the road. This is what you're responsible for.
One of the things that's not very much available to us right now at this point, and again, I'm talking more about like the data quality pieces, right? I mean, things that I'm really, tools that I'm really enjoying to help with some of these things, right? One of them is like Miro. I have not seen another tool kind of like Miro at this point. So MIRO is the like Miro collaboration tool, something like that. Very easy. It's almost like the idea of going to like a Word document and being able to type things up in real time and see multiple people in the same document or whatever. I feel like that's a very interesting tool, especially working remotely, where you need multiple people to kind of get together. You can build process flows. You can see other people writing documentation things down in there. And so having little, you know, just little nuggets, right? Here's my process for this. And I think, Seth, you hit the nail on the head. If you don't have it written down anywhere, there's nowhere to mm-hmm. share it. There's nowhere to let people know what's going on. We don't have any communication around, like, did this process even work? Do we need to make a modification to the process? Did we miss a step? You know, testing is not rigorous enough. We've found XYZ issues. We need more rigor around testing to make this stuff work. And I'm a huge fan of automation of this stuff. I enjoy building process, I guess, maybe more than anything else. I like thinking about how to make it more efficient. So I think
in this bubble.
Yeah.
Which we love, right? We've solved the world's problems once again. Racy, SDLC, right?
Yeah.
Hold on, though. But the question is, it's not that easy.
Oh, it's not easy at all.
If it was that easy to implement these things, right? And I think you need some process. You need to spend some cycles. so that everyone has an idea of where to go and who's responsible. So why doesn't this happen?
Oh, okay. So
why is this,
so,
yeah. why is this topic?
This is great.
What are some of the struggles of like,
what does lack of ownership look like? What does no ownership look like? What does miscommunication in ownership properties look like?
If you want to find out why some of this is so hard, I encourage everyone to build a power app for their business. And let me explain why. Why that goes along to what you said, Seth. Power apps compared to a Power BI report, which is usually the end result. The power app, you have to define who can input what, because the application is really meant for people to not just interact with, but input data and modify data. And certain people have certain rules depending on where they're at. And that can get very challenging to assess points if it's not written down. And then you have to define that in the application. When is there approval processes? Because the reason why a lot of this is difficult, and I'm going to send out this document. It's about planning a Power App project, but I think it's very relevant to data input too, because you're dealing with multiple people in different roles who maybe don't know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Other parts of this too is approvals. Who approves what? In what point in the process? You have to very much outline from, in a sense, almost like a story from user becomes a member to, you know, when do we input this information to when do we validate this information? And there's multiple people involved before, in a sense, it's in a data table or if it's in a data model, we're not even close to that. The other part is the incentives. People mm-hmm. always say I'm busy. The other part is people will try to find loopholes, and I've seen this.
Well, people are busy.
If
you don't spend time automating things, like so, right. like well, this is the complication that people have, right? In their mind, they're like, "Well, I could do this in 5 minutes. Great, you can, but you have to do it 5 minutes every single time you touch this thing.
Yeah,
why not automate it? So spend 30 minutes because that now, if you do this five times, you know, six times." You've now covered any of right. those extra 5 minute things that you've done.
And
so
you'll, yeah,
I think sometimes we lose sight of bigger objectives and we spend time not automating things and making it more efficient. And we just do that same thing over and over. I'll just copy that data from here, put it in this Excel sheet, copy data here. I'll just do it every time.
It's technical debt, but for the business really, because yep. people are not going to go back and like, oh, I need to review X, Y, and Z. Because I don't have the time to do so, nor do I see the value in doing so. And then that adds up. This is the same thing as what you look at your basement every November.
Yep.
You clean your basement and then you look back, go, what happened here? Because you did not take the time to organize every single time you went back down. It's that same idea where things begin to build up. You can data, it's not good enough to clean your data once unless you, as success point, it's going to be successful when there's a process around this. The other point that too is, you have to understand people are, you'll be amazed at what people will do. If there's an approval process, if it's slower than they would like, they will find a way around it.
Oh, people are crafty, man.
People are crafty. Right.
People will get things done regardless of if they're following the process or not.
Even if you put a, right. If yep. you put a process in place and let's say it's a little slower than people want, it's like, well, I need to upload or I need 20 things to up, you know, manage. And I have to do one at a time. You're telling me to spend an hour on this when I can just upload this Excel sheet and completely circumvent the process. People will do things like that because they, again, what they perceive the value of that. If they're not.
So I'm not a big fan. Like, to me, that's too much process, right? Like, if you're putting things in place that you can't respond to, where an individual can't say, like, you realize, like, your five steps can be done in this one. Okay, well, improve it, right? But the fact that you're down on that minutia, right? Like,
right.
I'm not talking about controlling people's lives. I'm saying like, hey, there's a responsibility area. That's yours, right? Like you, whatever comes out of that or how you do that is yours, provided if there are caveats of like,
right.
you should put that information here when you're doing it, right? Like, I don't care how you do it.
Right.
And I agree, you can over-process things to the point where people are like, great, I'm going through right. the gauntlet, right?
That's not helpful either. I think, to Tommy's point, right? If you add so many steps to the process,
correct,
that people are like, I don't understand, or this takes too long. Like, you're, again, to that point, right? I'll say it again, I'm lazy. Therefore, I assume that everyone else is somewhat to some degree lazy as well. So because I'm lazy, I want to find the path of least resistance. I'll right. work harder to find that path of least resistance. Well, and Matthew Roach says you should sometimes be the path of maximum resistance. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
But it's not even too much process. It's not like always click A before you sign onto your browser kind of thing. Something medial.
No.
It's the other things where other people are involved, where sometimes you need the approval. That can slow things down. It becomes bottlenecks. You have all these additional steps because you have culture. Like the finance is like, oh, we have to approve everything. Okay. Well, then you put that process in place. That can slow things down. That can bottleneck some bulk uploads. The idea of getting this done compared to the medial tasks that need to be done, like the technology being used to do the process, right? Correct. Are you sending out an email? Do you have an application? Is the application clunky? We've talked about this before. People are also selfish, where if they are doing the same thing and they're finding it difficult, they're not going to keep doing that. They'll find a way around it, which will break the process and thus break the quality. It's the same thing saying we need a process to take the trash out every week, every Thursday at 6 p.m., but you have no wheels on your trash can. People are going to throw it out.
In my case, you just can't remember, or you're getting stuck busy doing everything else. You need to set an alarm.
You say you're too right.
So you remember to do it.
Right. But I don't think sometimes we understand the tools, the actual step-by-step that they're doing. Process is my last thing. Process is two things. It's the actual go into this application, input, gets approved. But then there's a whole other minimal micro steps of I got to remember the login. I got to go to this account. Like the actual click by click that honestly does matter too. And I think we forget that part. So that's my spiel.
I think it's really easy from the ownership conversation to say people are the problem. But when we say that, what does that mean? I'm always gonna
it's never solely the problem, people.
That individuals are not by nature like they're here to do a job and they wanna do it well. I'm gonna assume that, right? But I think the first place I go, which is why I say process, a lot of process solves that, or at least having one, right, is because I think the large majority of ownership problems are people don't know where to go or who they can rely on to do the next thing. And if you don't define that, then you're going to have a lot of going all over the place, or worse, you're going to have individuals who are high performers that create the easy button for a whole bunch of people to just keep hammering, and you're going to burn them out. Ooh. Or you're going to create a bottleneck because all of these people are going to the same person to solve the problem, as opposed to those people solving the problems on their own. I think another huge factor in here is time crunches, right? And if so much is going on in organizations, or so much has to be produced in an area, then we have to have process. You have to define how much work you can output if you're following these high level processes, to potentially sometimes push back and say, we need more resources, or you need to start level setting your expectations about how much quality work we can put through our department. In this is, how are we, without process, without high level understanding of who owns different things, whether it's on a micro level in a report or in an organization, you have to be able to have these things so you can hold people accountable.
Yeah.
Right. And within all that, that kind of just dovetails of these are the problems we see. How would you solve them? But all of them require time and effort to identify and figure out to solve. But ultimately, one of the biggest things I've seen is most individuals don't have an understanding of what the goal is. What is, is the goal really you doing your job and just getting the code out? Or is the goal producing a final report for the end user so they're happy? And are you doing everything that you can to make sure that we're delivering that for the person who needs it desperately in that business unit, right? The goal is that delivery. The goal is not just your little piece. So while you may not be responsible for all the pieces, right, are you hitting your timelines as well as ensuring that, like, hey guys, like, we're 3 days in, like, I see that in our SDLC process we're only like 4 steps in, we got 7 more to go, like, is there anything I can do to help? It's not in my area, right? But like, the finished goal for the team is the final product. It's not your microcosm, right? So when we talk about, like, as bigger, like, report to bigger and bigger projects,
yep,
I think people want to see employees own the final part, not just the microcosm. And that's also, I think, one of the big things we push a lot is skilling up, improving, like, what you know and how you know it, broadening your horizons, architecting a reporting solution as opposed to just the little piece. And I think all of that revolves around or broadens your scope on, like, what is the actual deliverable? When you first start out, the deliverable is, I built the model. As you grow, it's, we produced a final report for our internal user. As you grow, it's, we built this report and I'm following up with them 2 weeks later because I want to ensure that as we need to iterate, or we need to make it better, or it's solving their problem, because ultimately that's what we're trying to do with internal or external facing reporters: solve some problem, make some money, save some money, etc. And then, like, the lowest common denominators to me are, like, do you need to incentivize people? Like, I'm one of, like, hey, like, good work, good pay, like, make sure that the organization and you are on the same page. There are certain times where, depending on what branch of whatever organization we're talking about, you incentivize them in certain ways to take ownership or maybe step up and above and beyond, you know, their normal roles. Or ultimately you fall into the worst case scenario where people are lazy and they don't care, at which point they're probably walking their way out of an organization because, like, they're going to be the ones that are consistently not performing or not, you know, passing off what they need to another team member.
Not owning the ownership, not having the responsibility, right, there.
So I think we've been using the wrong word, or maybe there's an underlying word that dictates all of this.
I want to definitely point out here, Seth's coffee has substantially kicked in. We are 30 minutes into the podcast and the knowledge bomb has just dropped. Like, there's a lot of comments in the thread is, you know, Seth is on fire. So
we should start recording 30 minutes after we start talking.
Well, that's about the time I figure out the technology, and that's when we can get things going again. So, sounds about right.
Yeah, sounds about
future,
right.
Future Seth is even better than the past Seth. Yeah.
Tune in for episode 98.
I'm tomorrow. Feverishly. Seth, you said a lot of things. I just want to capture some of the bullet points that I wrote down that I thought were very relevant there. And maybe we talk about some of these. Growth, right? Show growth in your process, right? From I built a data model to we have a final report to we built a report and now we're reviewing that regularly. I thought that was really good. Like, that shows maturity in looking at the broader goal and as opposed to focusing on I need to build this one report. And then there's a couple of things you made note of here that I thought was very interesting and potentially you want to talk about. Challenges to ownership. What's the pushback? You know, where does that time, right? Super important. Right. Needing more resources. Right. We don't have enough people in what we need to get accomplished. Again, going back to that time piece and then understanding. Right. People don't have the right final goal or the incentives aren't correct for the team to kind of align there. These are really good. Yeah. You should write a book about this.
Well, at least an article.
at least a podcast. At least a blog.
And
a
that's
blog
two
post.
In a row. I got okay. I
you got to slow down.
You shouldn't be talking as much then. Stop releasing truth bombs.
I'm just gonna look pretty from now on the podcast.
Yeah. everything that you said to me, each point of those boils down to one phrase or one word to me, and it's behavior. Like our job, like. Process, incentives, goals, time, all of those are going to alter someone's behavior. And I think our job, and that's kind of culture too, when we've talked about what is culture, culture is an identity and it's also our choices we make. It's the behavior that people do. It's the processes, the traditions. So there's behavior involved. So our goal in terms of making people incentivized to do these things, it's not just putting a process in place, but nudging, I guess, altering their behavior in a way that they are following a set of processes that they know what to do. because time crunches are going to alter behavior. Incentives are going to alter behavior and choices that they make. The value they perceive in that is going to alter the behavior that they make. You can put a process in front of someone. It does not mean they're going to follow it to the book if they don't have the value or the time.
It's a really good point, though, right? But the when I say process, I tried to tie that to something else that's really important, right? Mm-hmm. What Mike was talking about with me yesterday. You don't throw a process at people. You show them how to do something and you train them, right? And then the process is just the reminder. Hey, I'm going to teach you why we want to do things this way. And we're going to try this out for 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then we're going to retro. We're going to see always change this working for you.
Yeah.
Right? Because we can always modify it.
Yep.
And it shouldn't be restrictive. But what it should do is be the reminder, like, oh man, I haven't done this in a month. What is that again? I'm going to go and look up that process that I find in Miro or Lucidchart or wherever.
Yep.
Like, oh, okay, yeah, here's the steps I need to follow. Right.
Correct.
And you absolutely need that on employee levels of ownership. Right. Like, what things do they own? Is it they only own parts of report building, or is it, you know, it's your senior and they own the execution of two other people and the report deliverable, right? Like, it doesn't matter how or where that ownership lies. It's, do people have the reference point, especially when you have time crunch? The more you throw at individuals, and it is amazing to me, like, how flipped out would somebody be from, like, even 20 years ago with how much an individual is able to accomplish in a day? But the like the overload of stuff that you need to do or can accomplish in a day, I guarantee you, like 10 times a day, I would be like, oh man, I got to go reference something. I got to go reference this thing because I've had 500 conversations in a day. I don't remember what happened last week, but I know I took a note, right? That's what a process should be. It should just be the reminder of something that you were taught how to do, right? And that you are just going to remind yourself how to do again.
Right.
And that's why you have that document.
But you made it easy for them. You've shown them the value. So you've altered, you've nudged their behavior. Right. Because now they're thinking about this.
And you started dropping why on a micro level, we're talking about the challenge, why I spent so much time when we were talking about the adoption roadmap of how important it is to just have this stuff as a, like, build this as context, because you need to train people how to do this stuff, not just throw a bunch of new process at them.
Exactly.
Because they'll see it as a tidal wave of BS that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Right. Their own incentive.
And where's the time to the time to sit down and understand the, like, I can read the process, I can do the process, but then it becomes just following steps and it doesn't really become an understanding of things.
Even in that, in implementation, right? Like, you very well might say, I want to implement this process, but what are the ramifications of that? You could have people going, guys, like, this is going to slow me down. And as an organization, you'd be like, I'm okay with that, but I can't accomplish the same amount of stuff because I'm doing all of these steps. Noted, right? I, as an organization, need to bolster up that area or potentially spend more in resourcing.
Right.
If I want everybody to follow a process, or we refine it enough that we can automate parts of it, Mike, right? To your point.
Yeah.
Do you automate or to make become it more efficient?
And again, I think the automation makes it easier for people. I want to share, there was a study done at a local school district and they wanted to have more kids eat vegetables. Like, that was like one of the goals. We want
cover them in chocolate.
Right. Yeah.
Got it. Solved it. Let's move on.
Solved it. Done. Okay.
Just DC.
So what they did is they actually split up at each of the schools. They had two booths or two trays where people could go. And rather than having the dessert on the same one, they put it on the last one people would go to.
Yep.
And they put the vegetables on the very first thing the kids see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the 62% of more kids were eating vegetables, or at least getting the vegetables.
Just because they put it earlier in the process.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
And it is like altering behavior. So the point going to what I heard from Seth, at least the way I kind of interpreted it, is all the different things we are going to provide to someone, the value of something, the process for something, the time to do it. Like, you know, here's the things. You have to make it in a way that it's going to not just like, oh, wow, this is important, but I'm not going to do it. Or I know the process, but I don't understand the value. But it's also nudging, like, making it easy for them, giving them the right avenue to do so, just to nudge or alter their choices, the choice to do so. And I think part of that incentive. So
Joe is commenting on your comment about the vegetables, Tommy. He goes, vegetable waste just went up 60%. Everyone takes them, but nobody eats them.
That's a whole other part of the game.
That's
I guess.
Not owning eating your vegetables.
That's not ownership. This has been incredible. We're almost at time already. This has been really, really good. I really like this one. One thing I'll just point out here too. I want to just make a note or pay record to, I guess. There is this process called PPT, People Process Technology, and that's a lot of what we've been talking about. We've been talking about this PPT process. So you can only modify those three things, I think. You can change the technology you use. You can buy different software. You can use different software. You can change. You could add things to the software that make it your whatever your technology thing is easier, right? That changes. You can change the people, bring in new people, train up those people. That's another influencer you can have here. And the other lever we can pull is the process, right? And so I think we've been talking a lot about around these different pieces that there's like a Venn diagram of these three areas, and you're trying to find that sweet spot in the very middle where, you know, you have the right levers to pull to make things more efficient by manipulating what's going on in the people or training the people and then changing the process or changing the technology. And the combination of those three kind of areas, I think, really blend well for when a team can start operating smoothly. And this is like, I don't know, I feel like sometimes this feels like pushing a rope, right? It's difficult. There's reason there's books and documentation and training around all these kind of things, because this is a real thought provoking, you know, challenge or area where that people can spend a lot of time researching and figuring out and improving.
You can't do it in a Word document.
Yeah. Or the one Miro document won't cover.
Yeah. The Miro document. Yeah.
Exactly.
No application that solves it.
Any final thoughts, that you guys want to wrap up with as we kind of like close out this idea of ownership? I think we took this a lot of different places. I thought the conversation was really good. I definitely was writing down, again, I have, as always, we talk, I have literally like a massive bullet pointed list of all the nuggets that came out of this. This was, I think, really good for me just to kind of hear all these things again. Anything else that you guys want to add for nuggets?
I would just want to refine. Yeah. I want to hear more Seth talk. So really love it.
Coming to an MBAS in 2023. Seth on ownership.
Step on ownership and process.
Exactly.
I would love to refine this more in future episodes. I think we took this in a lot of different places that can be their own, in a sense, own road.
Own topic. I would love
your own topic. So
I think you could break down a lot of this. You could say ownership in the context of data, ownership in the context of reports, ownership in the process, in this context of models. I think you could even have a bit more of a conversation around what does that mean or what does it look like to you in various areas. Seth, any more nuggets?
I'll be interested in seeing like a lot of our conversations, even with Matthew, like whether or not the implementation aspects kind of address some of these areas. I don't know. It'll be interesting to dive into that, because a lot of that adoption roadmap of how you set up these things in your organization and rollout, right? Rollout is always the most challenging part, and it's probably in large part to a lot of what we discussed today. Mm-hmm. And if people solved it completely, I think it wouldn't be as big of a topic.
Yep.
And maybe that's because every company culture or, you know, group of people is different and you need to engage them differently.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see, you know, I think in the future where this, you know, continues to come up.
Yeah. The last thing I find it interesting, there is actually an article on the adoption roadmap on content ownership.
Ooh.
And we didn't touch on any of it.
Well, there we go.
Well, we briefly touched.
Stop but, like, giving
it,
away all
it
the,
was all about,
the
like,
future
it,
things.
It's all about the report, not necessarily the business terminology and the other side. So just another tidbit of interestingness.
Content.
Tidbits.
Love tidbits. It.
Here on Explicit Measure Podcast.
We don't give you real insights. We just point to everyone else who does.
4.585. Are we,
awesome.
So Mike, are we going to go backwards?
I think we will. I want to see if I can fix it. We're going to do episode 85 first, and we're going to come back and finish out episode 84 next week on Tuesday, hopefully.
If you're on the podcast, don't worry about anything you just said. It'll be
It'll be nice and smooth. You'll see the episode just roll on through. Goodness gracious, man. I can't take myself anywhere. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate everyone here for being online. I only ask for people who have been online and enjoying the conversation. Thank you very much for participating in the chat on YouTube. Thank you very much. That was a lot of fun. If you don't mind, if you like the content here, if you're entirely confused on how episodes and numbering works, feel free to share this with somebody else and let them know that, you know, Explicit Measures podcast adds some value, but yet is very technology constrained. I should fix my process was what I should do here. There's a weakness in the process here, apparently.
There is.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, at least we know who owns OBS.
Awesome. With that, thank you very much for listening. Tommy, where can you find the podcast?
So if you're listening right now, join live on YouTube and LinkedIn. Follow Power BI Tips. If you're listening, please, or if you're watching, please subscribe on Apple and Spotify. Leave a rating. Helps us out a ton.
Awesome. Well, thank you all very much. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.